A hospice is a place that you go to die, but it's so much more than that. This podcast from Loras Hospice will show you the extraordinary work that takes place there, the stories, the people, and above all, the patients and families who we support to make the worst time in their lives not quite so bad. In this episode, we explore the role of physio and occupational therapy in palliative care, how it helps improve quality of life, and how patients can keep their independence despite incurable illness. So in this episode of the Loras podcast, we're going to talk about caring for people as they reach the end of their lives. And I'm here with Tracy, who is a nurse on our inpatient ward here at Loras, and Pete, who is a volunteer on the ward. So firstly, Tracy, how do you talk about dying to patients when it's becoming really real to them? How do you broach a subject which can be so difficult and emotional?
Most people are really sort of quite open about it, and I think by the time they get to us, they know that probably if they're not coming in for something more specific, that their time is short. They do ask sort of directly, am I dying? And I usually say, what makes you think that? And then build on that. Relatives are a bit more tricky. They want to know, and they want to know when, where and how.
Yeah. But if you tell them it could be any time, then they'll never leave, will they?
Yes, that's right. So what we normally say to relatives is we get a good indication of when things are nearing the end that only probably a nurse would know. And if that time came, we would be saying to you, I think you ought to stay, or tonight might be a good time if you've not seen people to get them in. And usually that's enough.
How about you, Pete? What's your experience of this? Because you obviously volunteer in Bereavement Hub as well.
Yeah, we're not on the medical side of things. The nurses will fill us in if they say sometimes is a patient that is imminent. They will say that to, you know, sort of say they're getting close. Sometimes we'll go and sit with them. If there's no one else to sit with them, we'll sit with the patient, hold around. Sometimes the patient themselves, before that happens, they'll sometimes have asked me, is it my turn to die today? You know, well, when do you think I'm going to die? And what's it going to be like to die? And these are questions that obviously, I don't know. No idea.
And how do you deal with
that?
No.
Well, my answer to the people who ask what it's going to be like to die is, my answer to them is always, well, I really don't know because I've never been there, but I think it's probably like going to sleep, where when you go to bed at night, you don't know you're going to sleep. Nobody ever knows they go to sleep until you wake up in the morning and you know you've been to sleep. And I think death is probably going to be something like that. You suddenly get to the point and that's it. You've gone to sleep. That's only my answer to it. I don't know. I might be totally wrong. I don't know. But none of us will know until we get there.
No, that's right.
You know?
And do patients, do they find that reassuring?
Yeah. They'll sit and accept that. it's hard because obviously they're coming to the end. And some are frightened, some are really frightened. And they'll hold your hand and they'll grip your hand. I had one lady, I can't mention any names obviously, but one lady who I grew quite fond of really. She'd been into Loras a couple of times and she came back in and the difference was incredible, but she was still the same lady. And I spent quite a lot of time talking with her, and it was obvious she was going downhill quite rapidly. And one afternoon, I was ready to go home. I came round to her, sat with her. Her family had already been in and talked and sat with her. And she was really sleepy and not really communicating much. But I held her hand, and she gripped my hand really tight. And I said, I've come to say to her, I'm going home now. But I'll see you in the morning, eh? And she gripped my hand again, and she never really spoke. But I said, so I'm going to give you a kiss, and I'll see you in the morning. So I gave her a kiss, and she gripped my hand again. And when I left, I knew she wouldn't be there the next morning, and she wasn't. And that hurt a little bit, because I knew she wouldn't be there. But such a lovely lady, and that's, we have so many patients, they're lovely, lovely people. Am I right?
Yeah, you are, Pete.
They're really lovely people. And the conditions that they come in and are in,
they
sometimes
to,
changes the way they are. But they're super people. They're lovely people. And
I think people find it really reassuring that when they do ask, sometimes they're not asking when they're going to die, but how they're going to die. And that's even trickier. And I think as nurses, all of us say to them, yes, you are going to die, we're all going to die, but because you're here, hopefully, and we promise to do everything we can to make that comfortable, to make you comfortable, to look after your family, and reassure them that their family will be all right. Initially upset, but
so that
they
question,
will
that,
go on.
That question is really, they're wanting reassurance, aren't they?
Yes.
For all those things.
Yes.
Is it going to be okay?
Okay. Yes, that's right. And I often say to people, you know, when they are under the effects of medication that does make them sleepy, is that everything is okay, and it is okay, and you're safe with us where you are. Obviously, I can't tell them it's going to be all right, because it's not going to be all right. But I think people just need the reassurance that they're safe, they're looked after, and cared for, really. And I think when people come here, they do see what goes on. They do see what goes on in the bays. They know when everybody's curtains go round that something's happened. But it's almost like they take it in their stride, because it is done quite openly. There isn't such a sort of stigma as there is in hospital, you know, that everybody's curtains drawn. Obviously, we do draw curtains if people want privacy and we can't accommodate them in a side room. But I think people are reassured by how they've been cared for when they weren't so unwell, and that care
you
carries on.
Built up that relationship.
And built up that relationship.
And trust.
Yes. Yes. And the same for families.
And is that a part of why we're so open with having visitors and children, birthday parties, all sorts of things on the ward? Because people need to see that life's going on around them.
Yes, that's right. And life does go on. And particularly when there's children involved. I mean, everybody gets upset when it's somebody young and they're leaving children behind. But for these children that are visiting here, it's almost just a transition, because their parents or grandparents, whoever it may be that they're visiting, have probably gone through a lengthy stage of illness. So it almost becomes very familiar to children, this environment. And then, even though, you know, they do require support, and we have got the facilities now to support children, children are very matter of fact about it.
But it's important to the patients as well, that they know those children, the children, that grandchildren that are leaving or whatever, are going to be okay.
Yes, that's
right. Part of them coming to terms with everything.
Yeah, and I think that's why the visiting is so important. You know, we are very open with visiting now the COVID restrictions have lifted, and it isn't unusual for children, grandchildren, to be seen out in the gardens with parents, babies in pushchairs, you know, whatever, because it is something that our patients value, their families. It's like we were saying yesterday, the focus changes. So the focus is, when they get to us, is no longer on treatment and getting to the next chemo or the next radiotherapy appointment or the next respiratory appointment, the focus is sort of put back on the patient and their families. And I think in the mechanics of all those treatment, things are lost. And, you know, if you've ever been down to oncology at the Royal, as lovely as they are, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 you know.
It's a busy, busy place.
Busy, busy place. So I think here, and I firmly believe it is a peaceful and tranquil place. It's a happy place. It's just that sad things happen here.
So why do you work at Loros? What's kept you working here at Loros for so long, Tracy?
It's just such a nice place. Yes, there is politics, like with all organisations, but the comradeship and the way everybody's a team together, right from the domestics, right up through, you know, to our ward managers, ward sisters, and above that, ultimately, people want to look after each other. Sometimes we fall a bit short, but then we're only human. Everybody does.
And Pete, you're one of the team, very much one of the team. You're not clinical, but you are...
I'm not clinical, no. I'm purely a ward volunteer.
But so much more than that.
I love what I do, and I do. I really enjoy being with the nurses. I think they're a fabulous one. It's a fabulous place to be. To sit and talk to patients, I think it's a privilege. You know, it's a privilege to be with them. It's a privilege to work with these nurses and whoever's on wards. Yes, I feel part of their teams, and I do, regardless of what team it is. And I try to help if they come to me and say, any chance you could get so-and-so a cup of tea? Yeah, I'll fetch them a cup of tea. That's what we're there for. Take a tea trolley round. Take it round for the fact that I can say hello to every patient in the wards by doing that. Even if they don't want to drink, you're just saying hello to them and you get to know them. It's just a fabulous place.
And then you get to see which ones might want to chat later on or are looking a bit lonely.
And it's not just... I don't always see that, but in like the domestics, they're in every room, so they're cleaning, and they'll come to you and say, is so-and-so in room so-and-so, they look a bit miserable, do you, any chance you go and have a chat with them? Yeah, go and have a chat. The nurses will say, any chance you go and sit and have a matter with them? Yeah, of course we will. So, yeah, and everybody's looking out for each other, aren't they?
Yeah.
Everybody's
and
out for each other.
I think a real big thing here, because it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a domestic, you're a housekeeper, you're a nurse, you're a HCA, you're just a visitor, you're a chaplain, you're a counsellor, you're comp therapy, everybody's same, volunteer, everybody's focus is the patient. So it isn't unusual for me to say, or, you know, for a domestic to come to me and say, what's it? It's just asked me if I can fetch the nurse. I think he's in pain. And I think that's the nice thing about the ward, that everybody on the ward is approachable by everybody. And there is no sort of rank and reason.
No, there's no reason there.
It's not, you know. And everybody works together in a big team. Because at the end of the day, if everybody's in a big team, we're all doing the same thing, it just works so much better.
I guess families can see that as well, can't
yes.
they? That's
yes,
a,
they do.
A big change from coming from other institutions, maybe.
Yes, that's right. Well, from my personal point of view, it was the first time in 6 weeks when my father-in-law came here, that we felt safe to leave him here and to go home and get some well-earned rest, which we couldn't do where he was previously.
And you were a nurse at that point, so you were viewing it all through a nurse's eyes.
Yeah. And that I think that's quite difficult, because obviously different nurses have different ways of working, have different standards. And I think here the emphasis is always striving on the standards to be really high. And I think in some other institutions, people are so demoralised, you know, trying to sort of swim against the tide, really, that when people come here, they do see a massive difference.
Mm.
It is like landing on a different planet.
Mm.
I've been to a patient this morning with a cup of tea, who, a lady who was extremely tearful. And her doctor had been in to see her, and I have no idea what was told to her. She may have had some really bad news, and she was very, very upset and tearful. And I said, "Are you all right, Ma? Look." And she said, "Not really, no." So I said, "Would you like a hug?" She said, "I'd love a hug." So we had a hug. I put my arms around her, and she sobbed in my shoulder.
And that's sometimes all people need. Sometimes that's better than anything.
She just wanted a hug.
Any, the closeness, and this is what we were saying yesterday, you know, if you'd went into hospital, you would never dream of getting on the bed with your wife, husband, son, daughter. I mean, people always ask us here, or a lot of the nurses volunteer it and say, "Let me take the cot side down, you know, you can get a bit closer," or, you know, "Let's put the chair this way, and then you can be right up close." You know, we've got to be more flexible and open, and, you know, because each individual need is different from another. I would actually want my husband to hold me.
Yeah.
And I think we have to give people that opportunity. For other people, it's not right. And probably for the older generation, it's not right. But then there are other things that are right for them. But, you know, these little things, they seem insignificant to us when we're well. But when you're unwell, it is the world. It's the end of the world if you don't get what you want. And a lady always said to me, "Make sure when I go, I've got my lippy on and my eyeliner." And we did. Because that was important to her.
And you made that promise to
Yes,
her.
That's right. We always try to make people look nice, because we know from experience that if people look nice after they've died, that relatives' memories are much, much better. And I wouldn't say the grieving process is easier, but I think it's easier to cope with when you've had a positive experience.
And the other thing I always think is that sometimes relatives will say they went to, nipped home to have a shower, or they were here and they went to have a shower and the loved one passed away on their own. But no, they didn't pass away on their own. Nobody dies alone here in Norroster.
No.
Nobody. There's always someone with them.
Or somebody around.
So, that they, you know, they're not alone.
And people choose to go.
Oh, yes.
When they choose to go. Yeah. We've seen it so many times. And I think, you know, when relatives are distressed that they weren't there, I do say to relatives, well, that's your mum's last way of respecting you and looking after you and protecting you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you haven't got to think about that minute that you weren't there. You've got to think of all the times that you have been there. You know, they always feel awful about saying when somebody's died that they're relieved. And I always say to them, never feel guilty for being relieved, because you have travelled this journey with them. You've done everything you possibly can. And it's not relief, it's almost release, that, you know, this sort of responsibility, the worry, you know, although it's replaced with other emotions, that actual acute, gotta get me, gotta get them there, gotta have this treatment, gotta have that treatment, go to the consultant, you know, all the endless things they have to do and all the other things in between. And for some people it's running a house, looking after elderly parents, looking after young children. You know, it's a massive burden to care for somebody at home. And, you know, hats off to people that do it at home, especially now when support is so scarce, but people still do manage it.
Mm.
But that's an individual choice. But certainly our relatives have done an amazing job.
Mm.
And they may get a bit short-tempered and a bit frayed at times, and we all expect that. That's just the nature of the job.
Mm. Mm. It's a release for family when
yes.
they come here, because they can go back to being family,
mm.
aren't they? And new nurses take on that burden.
Yeah, that's right. And I do say that to people, you know, you've done your bit, this is our time now. You go back to being husband, wife, gran,
mm.
granddad. You know, let us take some of the strain off what you've been doing.
Mm.
You're not his carer, you're his wife, or you're his mum, or her mum,
mm.
his mum, whoever the, you know, relative is. It's usually husbands and wives.
Yeah. I get, and you're giving a bit of control back to the patient
yes.
as well in that
yes.
respect, aren't
yes.
you? So,
yes.
as you mentioned, mum might not want to actually die whilst their daughter is there.
Mm.
You're enabling that patient to feel a bit more in control.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing for these patients that we have, that feeling of a loss of control. So when you think about it, when we're all well, we control our own lives, our own destiny, where we go, what we do, who we see. But I think when you become unwell, you lose that control because everything is governed by
mm.
somebody else. So perhaps a neighbour's taking you to an appointment, or your son or daughter is, they've got to go to work, you've got to do this. You've got to be there at the doctor's to get your blood done, see if you can have your next round of chemo. You've got to go in for your chemo. You've got to stand in the queue and car park.
Mm.
And it becomes almost like tasks that you've got to do and not really a life.
Mm. And hopefully Loros can help restore some of that calmness and control to patients and their families. Thanks. Thanks, Pete, and thanks, Tracy. That's really great.